This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, let's do it. 8 o'clock Tuesday, once all the dust has settled on the football world. Because that's where most of the pettiness comes from this time of year, is from the NFL and college football. We do the Pettycast. We highlight pettiness. We love pettiness on this show.
Right.
Let me just
embrace,
be very clear.
Embrace the dark side. We're the anti-D'Amico Ryans. Embrace the uglier parts of your human side. You got to do it now, and that way you don't do it to your kids later on.
That's exactly right,
yeah.
Seth.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start locally here. I had a bunch of it stacked up yesterday, and then this little video pops up, and it looks so familiar. And it was Figgy.
Yeah, Figgy's good with this.
Down in the bowels of NRG Stadium. Mm-hmm. With Hannah McNair walking towards him.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't look like she was with Cal. She was walking with somebody else, but she was walking towards Figgy.
Ooh. Who the hell was that guy?
She was a big person. It might have been security. Who knows? But this is right after the Colts game ended. Mm-hmm. And here's what it sounded like.
What's up?
Have you seen anybody sweeping lately?
Yeah, and then she started doing the sweep motion.
Like she did when they swept the Titans last year.
Yeah.
I knew I'd seen this before.
And she's wearing a skirt that's kind of almost like a big, like, prairie skirt almost. So, like, it gives the image almost of, like, a woman out in Kansas in the 1800s sweeping the trash off her porch. You know, sweeping the dust off of her porch.
A little bit.
Yeah, or maybe Indiana. Yeah. She was like, yeah, get this crap out of here.
The ultimate
trolling. That's what
trolling.
She was saying to the Colts.
I love it.
Good job.
I love this pettiness more than maybe any other pettiness.
I saw Hannah in the rundown, and I was like, oh, no, I don't want to get petty about Hannah. That's not going to be popular
with the people
of Houston or Hannah herself.
It was highlighting her pettiness, which to me is one of her greatest traits, is that she does
she's not afraid.
She does not forget.
She ain't scared.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
She ain't scared of these other NFL owners like Jim Irsay. The AFC South might have the...
Shotgun.
We have the best group of owners in terms of just character. They could be characters in WWE.
Oh, 100%.
Shad Khan with his mustache. You got Jim Irsay with his substances.
You put Hannah McNair with the version of Will Anderson that walked into the postgame show the other day.
A pro wrestling.
With the shades and the cowboy hat.
A cage match where you got Jim Irsay walking out to his guitar music that he wrote himself.
Oh, my God.
And Shad Khan. You know, Shad Khan just...
Who owns a wrestling company.
Directing a tag team to do dirty stuff or something.
Yeah.
And then Hannah coming in off the top ropes.
Hannah with the trash talk. Mm. Oh, my God. You know what? I'm going to give her an acknowledgement, too, while we're at it. I'm gonna acknowledge Hannah.
Acknowledge me.
For that sweeping comment. All right, let's get to Aaron Rodgers. I just hate him so much. Waxing poetic about the darkness is peak annoying Aaron Rodgers. He was asked about the darkness...
His darkness retreat?
He was asked about the darkness that the Jets are in
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's about the darkness the Jets are in right now. And here's what he had to say.
Call this a moment of darkness for this team. Is that how you see it? And how do you get out of it? I mean, because you could just stay in the darkness as well.
Yeah, I've been in the darkness. You got to go in there. Make peace with it. Offensively, our goal has just got to be score 30. Doesn't matter what... The other two sides are doing. You know, we have trust in our defense and teams. But if we're not scoring 30, we're underachieving. This offense can do that every single week.
He makes it sound like he's fighting dinosaurs or something.
He's been in the...
I've been in there with the lions before.
I've been in the darkness. I went to a high-priced fancy retreat stayed almost the expected time in the darkness. Remember, it was supposed to be like a week, and then it he came out after like 36 hours.
Dark enough. Yeah.
You know what he did? Anthony Richardson his way out of the darkness. That's enough. That's enough.
That's who
One thing you know about
week.
The darkness is that you can always get out, I plan on doing at the end of the year.
Tapped his helmet. Shannon Sharp killed Aaron Rodgers yesterday.
He did?
Yeah.
It couldn't happen to a more smug,
cavalier, condescending guy. Oh, that's even low for you. Now, who else are you gonna blame it on? You're running out of people to fire and demote. You fired Robert Saleh. You gonna fire Olbrich now, the interim coach? You demoted Hackett. What you gonna do? Demote the new offensive coordinator? Who else you gonna trade for? Who else you gonna bring in?
Right. So that was.
The whole thing is he's almost addressing Aaron Rodgers like he's the GM there, right? And I think that's the ironic thing about where the Jets are right now. Jets, who by the way are favored to win this game versus the Texans on Thursday. It's that Robert Saleh, very good defensive mind and coordinator. He's had, since he became the defensive coordinator in San Francisco, he's had impressive defenses. And the Jets were still a very good defense right up until Robert Saleh got fired this year. So Robert Saleh gets fired, and you look at the sum total of where the Jets are right now. You fired the guy who was really good at one thing at least, which was getting the defense to play well. You fired him for something that he had no control over, which is who is your quarterback, who is the coordinator for that quarterback, all these things. The organization decided, we need to get rid of the guy who's actually good at a lot of things for something that we're actually responsible for, and let's see how it goes.
Yeah.
And it's going as you might have expected. It's that, okay, the offense still hasn't come along, but the defense the last 2 weeks has fallen apart.
Yes.
So it's... the fact that the Texans are underdogs in this matchup has me more amped up and ready for this game than ever, because this is a team in the Jets that should be on vapors right now. If you want to really get everything clicking, even without Stephon Diggs, and if you want to start to look more like the team that you look like on paper, go do it versus a team that's 100% not looking like the team they are on paper.
And yet, they're a competent kicker away from being at least 4-4. Well,
that's
four.
Right. Zuerlein, their kicker,
he's terrible.
Yeah,
he's cost them at least 2 games.
They lost that game. Yeah,
they lost the Denver game because of him, and they lost the Buffalo game because
of
him.
Right. Yeah, you swap Kyme Fairbairn. Screw quarterback talk. You give the Jets the Kyme Fairbairn, and they're a 500 football team.
And you take Kyme Fairbairn
away from the Texans, they're a 500 football team.
Yeah, and so there you go. I mean, if you're wondering why the Jets favored, they're 2-6. That's a big reason why, no question. All right, let's keep going. Pettycast. This is some good pettiness from an NFL player. So Mike Leslie is a reporter for WFAA in Dallas. And they call it the WFA here on this show. So on a play in the San Francisco-Dallas game, George Kittle caught a ball, a catch and run that he brought down to the goal line. And Trayvon Diggs looked like he might have been loafing it a little bit. Looked like he might have been making business decisions. Kind of chased him late and sort of pushed him out of bounds.
Looked like he was trying to de-pants him.
Something. Yeah. But whatever it was, it caught the eye of Mike Leslie of WFAA in Dallas. And he tweeted, what is Trayvon Diggs doing on this play? That was it. He retweeted a video of the play and said, what is Trayvon Diggs doing on this play? Game ends. Clearly, Trayvon Diggs, first thing he did was go to his phone and see this. Walked out from the locker room to the media horde waiting to go into the locker room and confronted Mike Leslie about it.
How that whole play that you took from that? You don't know football. You can't do nothing that I do. You can't go out there and do nothing. Stay in your lane, buddy. Stop playing me, bro.
Just asking a question, Trayvon. I mean, I'm happy to have you answer the question.
How that whole play, that's what you took for that? That's what you got from that? That whole play, that's what you got from that?
I'm asking.
We can talk about it more. What were you doing?
If you couldn't hear it in the background, Trayvon's final salvo was, talk about D's nuts. Which to me made him the good guy in all this. Yeah. I was like, man, Trayvon's being kind of an a-hole. I mean, the guy's just a reporter doing his job, and then he's talking about these nuts.
I was like,
you win, Trayvon.
I like the confrontation. I like players addressing media members from snarky tweets or everything.
That is
petty, though. Well, it's a good, I think it's good to, now, but the defense that the reporter had, which is whether you want to believe he's being smarmy or not, it is a question that can be answered. So a lot of it comes in, how are you interpreting the question? What filter are you seeing it through?
Right.
And I think Trayvon might have just, maybe there was a little bit of truth to what that tweet was.
Good pettiness right there.
Yeah.
We do not have audio of this. There's video out there of it. But the Denver Broncos against the Carolina Panthers. By the way, if you want to text in on the 5-Hour Energy fan line, some of the pettiness that you saw this weekend or that you've got, by all means, send it in 713-572-4610.
One of the biggest complaints people have about this segment is when I forget that I'm supposed to be being petty. Who am I supposed to be petty towards in that exchange between the reporter and Trayvon Diggs?
I would say initially Trayvon Diggs, but the D's nuts at the end makes me petty towards
Mike
Leslie.
That was good, yeah. It almost made me like, oh, come on, Mike Leslie. You didn't have a better answer for D's nuts?
Right,
J.C.
Horn of the Carolina Panthers.
Mm.
Don't know if you saw this. At the end of the Denver game, Sean Payton was apparently running gadget plays, forward on fourth and two late in the game.
Yeah.
J.C. Horn, whose dad, ironically, Sean Payton coached at one point. He's Joe Horn's kid, the wide receiver that used to play for the Saints. Apparently went up and got in Sean Payton's face. There's video of it. The audio's not very good. And complained about Payton doing these things at the end of the game. If we're talking about who to be petty towards in this one, for me, the reality is the only person lamer than running up the score guy is guy complaining about getting the score
getting
run
the score
up on
when
them.
You're the guy that
you know? Stop him.
I just don't like, let it go, man. They can do whatever they want to you. You know what? You are that team's
yes.
It's just they can do whatever they want.
Yep.
You can be upset about it all. Now there's one the limit there is when I guess the limit is going for it on fourth down, and that's a big question.
No, it's a jerk move.
You're adding a potentially physically damaging play both to your own players and to the opponent when you try to do that. I'm with you. Just okay, you're just gonna keep your mouth shut about it and remember for the next time. Payton himself has gotten petty as hell in his later years.
Yeah,
remember last year he had said it about the offensive coordinator for the Jets. Nathaniel Hackett. He said it was the worst coaching job he'd ever seen the year before when Nathaniel Hackett was the coach.
Yeah,
after this game he said we did what we thought we could do offensively versus this defense.
Yeah,
basically don't be that impressed by what we did. It doesn't count because they suck.
He did. Yeah. He basically said the Panthers suck. I mean, he's right, but it's wild to hear a coach say these things. Someone says, I'm petty. We don't have a Diggs update. I'm going to let Seth handle that from now on. If you missed it in the 6 o'clock hour,
I read a
fake tweet
from a fake chef.
It was a Diggs update, so you don't want that.
Was Sean duped by the blue check mark that doesn't mean anything? Nope, this guy didn't even have a fake blue check mark.
Yeah,
thanks, I mean a real blue check mark. Yeah,
yep, thank you. Yeah, so
keep
it tuned to Sports Radio 610 all day long.
I looked at it, and I was like, wow, Adam Schefter really deserves a lot more credit for making the money he does with only 3,000 Twitter followers. Yeah, good for him.
I'm keeping this receipt. Mike Elko, Texas A&M head coach. I thought an excellent, excellent form of pettiness after the win over LSU on Saturday night. A&M gets a huge win over LSU, and here's Elko talking about his program.
We're very honest. We're very open. And this is a real program. It's not fake. It's not a politician running this program, talking fast and BSing everybody. This is a real program. And for all the recruits out there, this is a real place. And if you want to be really good at football, this is a really good place to be.
Okay, so that's, an excellent soundbite. You know, to me, I'm going, okay, clearly he's talking about Jimbo Fisher. And you know, cool. You know, you're in a spot now. You are undefeated in the SEC heading into November. You can peacock a little bit. You know, you got one loss to Notre Dame, and that's it. Then he comes back yesterday, Seth.
Yeah.
And he walks it back.
Oh.
Just the last thing, and it's just comical that I actually have to do this, but it's necessary.
Is it really?
You know, in the post game, I was asked to kind of give a synopsis on how we sell culture to our program. In doing so, I made a statement that seemed like a very benign statement that somehow managed to be taken as a shot directly at people. You guys gave me multiple opportunities in 9 months to take shots at people, and I've never done it. I have nothing but respect for Coach Fisher. I've said nothing but positive things about Coach Fisher. I'm the head coach at Texas A&M because of Coach Fisher. I appreciate who he is, everything that he's done, and for anybody in the media to think that that was what I was doing post-LSU is it's asinine.
Because I got to stay petty. I've always torn. I didn't feel like it was necessarily, certainly 100% a shot at Jimbo Fisher. I know. Am I a sucker for that?
No, because we
the
have
time.
No, because we have people texting in on the 5 hour energy fan line.
Yeah,
that he may have been talking about Brian Kelly,
right?
The coach
right,
he just beat,
right? Or just any standard,
who literally used to be in politics.
Honestly,
by the way,
like any standard stock image in your brain of the head coach that you don't like.
Yeah,
you know, and that's where this happens all the time. Where it just if I say anything about politics in general, like there's a huge legion of people. When I'm trying to be straight down the middle and talk about politicians in general or anything, that are convinced that I'm either talking about Trump or Kamala or whatever, and they either get angry or endorse it. Or yeah. Like, no, I'm trying like hell just to talk about politicians in general.
I immediately thought Jimbo Fisher.
Yeah, yeah. No, which is where people's brains go. Yeah. But I don't think, I think he probably was just talking about your standard slimy cartoon version of a college head coach.
Still petty, because okay, at least he seemed petty on Saturday night, and then he came back on Monday petty at all of us that we would have the gall to interpret it in such
yes,
a way.
Yes.
So
okay,
he was still petty in some
I'm gonna
shape,
be petty towards
fashion,
him and like being in the business as long as he's been and not understanding in the moment that's how it was gonna
that's how it was gonna
be perceived. Yeah.
Last one here, Tom Brady praises Josh Allen by saying he's no longer a spaz.
Sometimes he played like a spaz, like a grade schooler on a sugar high. But now he's controlled the chaos. He's like a storm coming into town, and you don't want that storm coming into this town.
Oh, I like it.
I'm going to be petty towards Tom Brady, and that was a little Mark Sanchez-like. It was a little too prepared. It was like, okay, I'm going to get this line in at some point, and this is how I'm going. And I just tend to... It's kind of like new comedians versus old comedians. Newer comedians tend to not have as many canned jokes, and they're not as stuck to the script. Where the old school comedians, you know, they might do the same jokes for 10 years.
Oh yeah,
they're never going to retire them. I like the guys that are a little bit more off the cuff.
Yeah, that was not. Now, where are we on spaz as a society?
I don't think you're supposed to say it.
I don't think so either.
Because I think it goes back to like people with developmental issues or anything. So yeah.
Do you think Brady got a talking to afterwards?
I don't know.
Like,
yeah,
here are the things you're not allowed to do. You're not allowed to talk to other teams' front offices.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to go to production meetings because you own the Raiders. You're not allowed to talk to other teams' quarterbacks, and you can't use the word spaz.
The spaz thing, I think that's one of those things. Usually it was with politically correct stuff. I know, like, my first tendency is to think, like, no, I'm going to say what I'm going to say. Usually it boils down to, like, oh, okay, I'm going to be respectful to entire groups of human beings. I'll be polite. I'll be more polite. And I get it. I get it with the spaz. Like,
I do, too.
But I don't. It's not like Tom Brady's coming from it where he's saying it in a way where he's basically using the R word or something.
No. Yeah. I don't think so either. I was curious where we're at with using it at all.
As an individual, I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed that soundbite. Yeah. It was great.
But I don't think he's going to get fired over it or anything like that.
No. Yeah. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. That was a petty cat. Text in 713-572-4610. Send in your petties. Up next, a little perspective. I want to take a step back on the Texan season for a second, because the standings are all in order now. We had Monday Night Football last night. And for everybody that's kind of wringing their hands a little bit, just a little perspective on where the Texans are at the midway point of the season here. We will do that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Texans Jets, Thursday night, 7:15 kickoff. Is it 7:15 or 7:20? Shortly after 7 o'clock. Is your microphone on? Good job, Seth.
Turned it on myself.
Good job, dude. Way to go.
Ben's always in there just acting like I shouldn't deserve credit for the simplest of things. Yesterday, Ben got scared yesterday because I got mad. He had to be the messenger of something pretty simple.
You weren't mad at Ben, you were just mad at Ben?
I was mad in general, okay. Yeah. Like, Ben, were you nervous or did you feel bad? I felt like you were nervous even telling me that.
Not nervous, just...
You just didn't want to have to tell me that.
He was the bearer of bad news.
He had to tell me I had to just turn a light off. So listen, this is the deal in here. You know, obviously we know the way the world is going. We stream now, and it's been, you know, the podcasts do really well and everything. But there's cameras now. and they got nice webcams and stuff. And
yet we have nice cameras in here.
They have the absolute worst possible lighting setup for filming anybody.
You don't like feeling like you're being interrogated?
It doesn't. Yeah, like they're just like, you watch any little thing.
I like it.
Back when you started learning about Zoom and everything, people were like, okay, like light from the top is your enemy.
Oh.
And so they have lights that shine right over the top of us that make everybody look like 27 years older than they are.
Oh.
And so I just did a couple little things to try to fix that and correct it. And Ben had to tell me, like, hey, Seth, reverse all that now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But
that was man.
But that was a command from on high. That wasn't Ben.
I wasn't telling you.
Yeah, he said it apologetically. And I felt bad because I got mad. You could see it in my face. I got mad and frustrated. But I explained to Ben that it wasn't him that I was mad at. Yeah.
Is it you having a YouTube channel that's made you more sensitive to what the lighting should be?
Yeah, if you don't, like, if I don't have the light on, properly, I get nothing but made fun of for because you look like crap. You look like you need Seth, are you okay? You need sleep.
No.
And it's people, well-meaning people who aren't even making fun of you. They're like, dude, are you all right? You need to get some sleep.
I'm part of the problem. Yesterday, I took a selfie of me, you, and the NFL Films people. That
were here.
James, Chris, and Louisa.
And I was standing right underneath that light right there. And I looked like I was 78 years old.
Can I tell you, when you made the joke about an age filter?
Yeah.
Amy had actually texted me 5 minutes before that and said, Seth looks older than you in that picture.
Yeah.
Because I was right. I was me taking the selfie.
It's interesting who positioned everybody in the photo. It was Sean.
Right. That's right.
Sean, hey, Seth, you stand here. I'm like, okay. I'll do it. And I hate, but there's a thing, though, that I hate. There's like some self-loathing in that, too, because it's fueled entirely by vanity. And yet, it's the kind of stuff that 10 years ago, if I heard me saying that stuff, I would have been like, oh, quit. Get over yourself, Sally. Right. What the hell? But now with the world we live in, it's vanity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you make any headway on getting the lighting changed?
Yeah,
I talked to
Parker's on top of it. We're good.
Okay, good.
The equipment that you need, it costs probably a total of, like, I don't know, $200 for the four of us here, the four microphones in here.
Yeah.
But on principle, I don't want to go out and do it myself.
Well, you shouldn't have to.
Right.
All right.
Well, no. That's the problem. I had gone out and done it myself.
Yeah.
And I was told, no, you have to stick with the company and not do something with your own money to make it better. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you got to stick with the rest of us suckwads. Hey, man, if we're going to drag people down, we're dragging everybody down.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay? You're coming with us. All right, little perspective on where the Texans are right now. They're 6-2. They are the best of the 6-2s.
Mm-hmm.
In the standings right now, the Texans are the 2 seed in the AFC right now, behind only Kansas City. They are in as good a spot as you can possibly be in for somebody that is 6-2 on the season right now. They're 2 games up in their division. They've got the tiebreaker over Indianapolis. They are 5-0 in the conference. They are 3-0 in the division.
Mm-hmm.
Their 2 losses, as far as tiebreakers go, may as well have happened on Neptune in the NFC, the Neptune Football Conference. They are a 90. Are you feeling this right now, Seth? Do you feel like the Texans have a 98% chance of making the postseason?
Because
that's what the computers are saying.
That's an indictment of the division more than anything else. And especially once you get to the trade deadline and some of the sellers become sellers and some other guys start letting go of the rope on those respective teams, it would be an extreme disappointment if the Texans, even without Stephon Diggs, ended up not making the playoffs just because they're in such a decrepit division.
Now, the scary thing is that 98%, I believe, was the same percentage the Jaguars were operating at last year, roughly there, to make the playoffs maybe not to win the division, but to make the playoffs after they'd beaten the Texans in Week 12 last year. And we all know what happened to the Jags.
Right.
Why will that not happen to the Houston Texans?
I think Joe Mixon, as long as Joe Mixon stays healthy, I think that even if things went south and they had a bunch of other injuries, he does enough to keep you in games, and it just does enough to affect the defenses that you're still going to get winning efforts, and you keep this cushion.
Mm-hmm.
If the Texans were to not make the playoffs, it would have to be some major injuries tacked in there too as well. I mean, because you look at the rest of the schedule, the imposing games still look imposing, But the easier games look even easier than they did at the beginning of
the
season.
That's a great point. So they have 9 games left.
Yeah.
I would say the games right now where if you threw the Texans on a neutral field with these teams, I feel pretty strongly they would lose the games, are the Lions, the Chiefs, and the Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
I feel pretty strongly if I were an unbiased bettor in the whole thing, yeah, I would bet those other teams. I'm real nervous about this Lions game.
The Dolphins, you're kind of holding off to the side to see exactly what they become in the next couple weeks with Tua back in the fold.
I think it's a good way to put it. I think the Jets are worse than we thought they would be, at least record-wise. I think you and I both agree they're not as bad as their record is. They're 2-6, but yet they're a team in disarray, kind of. The Cowboys are a worse team. I don't know if they're a worse team than I thought they would be. If you looked at the Cowboys' schedule, this is my concern about the Cowboys coming into the season. If you look at their schedule before leading up to the Texans game in Week 11, it looked like a hard schedule on paper. And for the Cowboys, it's played out that way. They're 3-4 right now. My fear with the Cowboys is that you're right at the point in the season, right past the midway point, and the Cowboys are something like 5-5.
Yeah.
And they're starting to get to that point like, okay, we got to get to winning here. we're still in this thing, and they're kind of desperate, and they're at home, and they've been just oddly bad at home this year and in the playoffs last year when they were unbeatable at home for the 2 years leading up to that.
Right. You know? Yeah, those are the two. The thing with the Jets is interesting. We were talking earlier about how the line has moved so much. The Texans started off favored. Now the Jets are favorite. And I always, when there's a lot of movement, I like to look at the computer models and just to figure out how much the computer models have this game variously being a draw or a slight advantage to the Texans or a slight advantage to the Jets. The one thing I wonder about is how much do the computers take into account the fact that the Jets defense has suffered greatly since Robert Saleh left.
If you
plug in all the numbers from the season, you look at the Jets defense and you think, well, okay, they've had some rough games, but the personnel is largely the same. They get Hassan Reddick back. They should be better in some regards. And yet, it's pretty rare that a really good unit loses its coordinator in the middle of the season. If a defensive coordinator gets fired, typically it's because the defense is performing poorly. Here you had Robert Saleh running the defense, but also the head coach.
Yes.
He gets fired midseason, and they're going in the tank defensively.
Yeah.
I think that's where the computers have a little bit of a glitch, and they can't account for that. It's such a rare occurrence that you can't really plug that into the model.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Like, Robert Saleh, the defensive coordinator, was collateral damage in firing Robert Saleh, the head coach.
So if you're plugging all the numbers in that factor in the injuries, weather conditions, all that and everything, it's a little bit of a black swan there, just the fact that you lost a good coordinator in the middle of all of it.
Merely winning your division games for the Texans gets them to 9-8.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're going to play, I think, of all the things you were talking about, Seth, where some of the hard games still look really hard, some of the other games that we thought looked hard look a little easier.
You didn't know exactly what the Titans were going to be, and it turns out it's not much.
Well, I thought they'd be a bottom five team, but I definitely didn't think the Jags would be a bottom five or eight team. I didn't think the Titans would be. I thought they'd be a bottom five team. Now, they're 1-6 or 1-7 with Mason Rudolph as their starter now, and they got beat by 38 or whatever it was this weekend. They're bad. And you've got two games against them. You've got a game in Jacksonville, which, you know, normally in a division game, I'd say, well, it's a road game in the division, and even though you're the better team, I don't know. Texans haven't lost in Jacksonville since 2017.
What's their streak for road division?
Nine
wins in a row.
Nine wins in a row in the AFC South. And that includes games in the Culley year and the Lovey year and last year.
Yeah, it's a weird streak. It's a really weird streak.
Yes.
You're right. I didn't appreciate it enough when you first brought it up.
If David Culley is at all involved in it, makes it weird.
Yeah.
You know, like involved in a good streak like that.
So, yeah, it would be a huge flame out if they miss the playoffs because of the division they're in.
Yes.
Now, on the other side of it, though, too, it is, as much as, D'Amico is preaching positivity and everything, if you look at it objectively, if you try to remove your emotions from it, yes, the Texans in a lot of ways have been operating like a 500 football team. There are some things statistically about them that are really good and impressive, but on the sum total of it all, the offense is a middling offense. They're right in the middle of the pack when it comes to scoring. The thing that I'm still trying to figure the defense out, because the defense statistically is a top two defense. In a lot of statistical categories, they're top five. And yet, just simply with points allowed, they're not as elite as a lot of other teams in the NFL. They're not like the Pittsburgh Steelers or whatever when it comes to points allowed. And that's where there's a little bit of a disconnect, I think, between how does it look? Does it look like a dominating defense?
Yes.
The way that it is saying that they're the number two in yardage allowed. I'm not there yet. They're not. But where the positive side of it is, whether you're negative about the Texans or positive about the Texans right now, both those groups of people have the same concerns.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a matter of, all right, can they flip that switch or turn the corner into really look more like the offense that they on paper they're capable of being.
Capable of being and have shown at times this year.
Yeah.
No question. So six
scoring touchdowns in the second half would be a nice little detail.
That
to
would
get
be a
out.
Start for yeah. sure. Yeah. So you win your division games, you get to at least 9-8. You go 4-5 the rest of the way. You match last year's record. If you go 10-7, the Colts have to go 7-2 down the stretch to win the division. And that ain't happening. Not with this Colts. Not with Anthony Richardson at quarterback.
Yeah, whatever Anthony Richardson is and whether he should get benched or not, I don't see it. I see Orlovsky's got a tweet out this morning that Anthony Richardson's film was a lot better than what the stats suggest.
Okay.
And my first question is, okay, like significantly better, even if he was 100% better than the film suggested, he'd have to be 100% better to be at a 60% completion rate.
Yes.
So to be at the average NFL, or actually a little bit below average performance, quarterback performance.
Great point.
So I know he's going to point to some of the drops. I want to tell you what, every drop tells a story. Some of those drops were because he's throwing it to the wrong side. He's not throwing a catchable football.
Yeah.
Right. He has incredible plays, and then he has annoyingly bad and inaccurate, or even if they're accurate, they're not quite right plays. I'll spot you a few of those drops, but no, the film was as bad as it looked. As the box score looked.
Yeah, let's stick with Richardson because he was. We'll do the power ranking of the power rankings at the top of the hour. Where are the Texans right now in the power rankings? They're all out this morning. We'll get to that. But Anthony Richardson was a huge topic yesterday on Get Up. Offensive lineman, former O lineman, former head coach, former quarterback. I'll take a swing at the Anthony Richardson pinata yesterday.
Yeah.
And we'll have that audio for you coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you.
We'll fixed the internet.
Internet's fixed.
Andy fixed the internet.
He came Andy in and unplugged and replugged in the router.
The most degrading of all repairs. All we had to do was we could have unplugged the router and plugged it back in.
The router. It's literally sitting right next to my left hand and your right hand. Yeah.
I didn't know that was a router.
I didn't either. That's my thing. Yeah.
And it's shaped differently.
A flying saucer. I'm like, oh, that's a cool flying saucer they've got right there.
I thought it was a button that you could push, like my bell.
Like your ding.
Yeah. So we're good to go, everybody that was worried about us. We've got internet again. Sean's not going to have a heart attack.
Good deal. And I promise not to read any fake tweets. That's what I'm blaming it on. No internet. Anthony Richardson on Sunday, following the loss to the Texans, was asked, hey man, why'd you come out on third and goal from the 23-yard line late in the third quarter of a game you're trailing by 10 after a play? Why'd you tap your helmet and come out? And here's what he had to say.
Man, tired. I ain't gonna lie. That was a lot of running right there that I did, and I don't think I was gonna be able to go that next play, so I just... this whole thing, I just needed a break right there.
So, just to point out, now he did shed Foley Fatakasi on that play, a 300-pound defensive lineman. That was impressive. But when he said, I ran a lot there.
Yeah.
If you hadn't watched the game, you'd be like, oh, okay, I got to go look and see where was this 50-yard sprint
in your
down the sidelines.
I remember that it wasn't a really long run, but in my mind, it was like that he'd had to run like 10 yards or so.
Yeah.
And on the
scoreboard, it was a sack by Jake
right,
Hansel.
Right, I remember. He did run 10 yards to the line of scrimmage.
To the line of scrimmage.
Where Jake Hansel tackled.
Measured it with a tape measure.
So
it was 10 yards.
Just to set the scene, though, think about this. This is what makes it even more egregious. At that point, the Colts are down by 10. They're on the 23-yard line with one more play to try to get a touchdown. And that's when Anthony Richardson decides he's too tired.
Yeah.
What? You had one more third down. You're down 10. You're right there butting up against the red zone. You're too tired to go out there and play. Man, that's major. That's a tough one, man. And you had Quentin Nelson basically say something to the effect of, that's not our standard, or we need to be better than that. Or
Ryan Kelly, too.
Oh, it's Ryan Kelly. Yeah. Okay. They weren't lambasting him or anything, but I think kind of pointing out. But, and it's just, it's a weird spot to be in when when you're having to explain things like this to your highly paid, highly drafted quarterback, yeah, starting quarterback. It's a little bit of, it feels like the conversations you have with high school kids.
Yes.
You know, about what you do and don't do. And, you know, the leader that you need to be as the quarterback. And some of the lack of experience of Anthony Richardson, who hasn't played a whole lot of football, including in high school, because he got injured in high school. And barely played in the NFL.
It started like 18 games or something like that coming into this year.
There's a lot that he still has to learn about life in the NFL, I think.
So if you think we're making a big deal out of this, hey guys, listen, it's one play, it's first time it's happened to our knowledge, maybe something like that. Okay, so here's a former offensive lineman talking about this. Mm-hmm. We heard Ross Tucker talk about it before. He's a former offensive lineman. You can listen to that conversation on the Odyssey app. Here was Damian Woody, former Patriots offensive lineman, on Get Up yesterday.
Bro, I'm a former offensive lineman. We don't get breaks. We're sitting blocking for you every single play to protect you, okay? And you're going to sit there and going to tap your ass out of the game? You need to get your conditioning up. I don't know what, I can't even wrap my mind around the fact that you're asking out of a game. You must be grossly out of shape or something else must be going on, but I don't have the luxury as an offensive lineman to tap my helmet to get out of the game. What the hell was that, Rex? I don't understand.
I mean, this actually happened.
It actually happened.
Yeah. Yeah, this had, and honestly, this is where I saw somebody, some Colts account yesterday said, oh, everybody's got to lay off Anthony Richardson. What were you doing when you were 22 years old? Well, a lot of guys who were playing in the NFL at age 22, myself included, have never seen anything like this at all. So I can answer you that question.
What were you doing at 22?
I always love that. Well, people used to say that with Johnny Manziel. Like if that,
right, that's
like,
what you say about people like, go out and get drunk.
The bar somehow is average 22-year-old. Yeah. Like, yeah. There are 4 million 22-year-olds in the U.S. right now.
Yeah.
At any given time, no more than two or three of them are NFL starting quarterbacks.
Right.
So the bar is a little bit higher than average 22-year-old. And I will add to that, various former NFL players who were football players when they were 22 years old in the NFL and quarterbacks have never seen anything like this. It was so foreign. It took, and you could hear it on the broadcast when they, before Richardson had spoken, but while the game is going on, obviously, when they said that the word from the Colts was he was fine, he was just tired, Tiki Barber was kind of like, oh, I guess that's an explanation. There's got to be more to it, right?
Okay, so we're getting opinions on this from the various backgrounds. So we got former offensive lineman,
and by the way, Damian Woody, he's a big guy. Adds the insult to injury.
Yeah,
it took me back to like running conditioning wind sprints.
Yeah,
look, the linemen usually the linemen are the guys that struggle with the conditioning tests.
Right.
Yeah, usually the running backs and the wide receivers and the defensive backs and the quarterbacks. It's like they're just cruising. Sure. You know, it's something they got to do.
Guy's tapping his helmet.
This is like a defensive back gasping for air on a conditioning test. Yeah. It doesn't happen.
Yeah. By the way, Damian Woody for the rest of this segment was up out of his chair just pacing. Because he was so angry about it.
Yeah.
He was pacing. He wasn't even sitting in his chair. Yeah. While the audio was happening that we're about to hear from Rex Ryan and Dan Orlovsky, Woody wasn't even sitting in his chair. He was just pacing and seething. It was really funny.
That was that. You know, Woody's thinking like, oh, you had to deal with a defensive lineman for a second or two and then run 10
and
yards.
And get tackled by an undersized linebacker.
Like, I deal with that guy every single snap.
70 snaps I deal with this guy. Here's Rex Ryan with his take on it.
I've been around this game all my life. Literally, I've never seen a quarterback have to tap out of a freak. Are you kidding me? Like, this is, hey, this doesn't happen. It's not possible that this actually happened.
You want your quarterback to be a guy you got to drag off the field.
Hey, he thinks it's acceptable.
Yeah.
What makes you think this is acceptable, kid? Is it the fact that the GM's making the head coach play you? Maybe that's what makes it acceptable.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, peeled a little bit of the onion back there. He basically just said Ballard is making Steichen play Anthony Richardson right now.
Yeah.
stated it as fact.
That Steichen's making him play?
No, no, no. GM is making the head coach play.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. I almost, when the week before Anthony Richardson had run the ball 14 times, seven of them at least on designed runs.
Yeah.
I almost wonder if there's a part of Steichen that's like, all right, well, our best shot at winning the football game and also maybe getting Anthony Richardson injured
is to run him as much as possible.
Right?
That's how we get Flacco in there. We get him hurt.
They didn't run him that much versus the Texans.
Yeah.
I wonder if they probably, I'm guessing on that interception at the end of the half, Anthony Richardson checked into a pass play that was just begging for an interception.
It handed the Texans 7 points.
And I'm wondering if they had a QB run. Because my first thought was QB draw.
Yeah.
It's empty.
Yeah.
Okay, that's classic. Are they going to run 4 vertical, try to clear it out, and give him a chance to run? No, they ran 4 short routes. And
on their own 12.
Yeah.
My God. Yeah. Ridiculous. Last one. Dan Orlovsky, former quarterback, talking about Anthony Richardson, quarterback.
When it comes to physical exertion, no one's job is easier on game day than a quarterback's. No one's job. I can't fathom Anthony saying this. I can't fathom him saying it and then getting into the huddle in the fourth quarter and looking guys like him in the eye and saying, like, I need 10 play drive here. Everything you got, I know you're dead. I need you to give me everything you have because we can go win the game right now. I can't imagine, because those guys are going to be like, you same dude that tapped out? That's the concern.
The whole team is sitting back wondering what the hell he's doing in there at quarterback anyway, when Joe Flacco is clearly the better answer at
quarterback. Can't believe he said that.
Flacco has poisoned another locker room with his modified greatness. That's what I'll call it.
I wondered about that when they signed Flacco. Just that, yes, he's a great mentor and a resource to have for young Anthony Richardson.
You
can't expect Anthony Richardson to stay healthy.
Right.
Flacco is the exact opposite of Richardson when it comes to the type of offense that you can run. And yet, it was almost a little too perfect that this is the guy that can create. For the very reason that the Browns didn't retain Joe Flacco, because it probably would have created too much potential
100%.
Controversy, that the Colts just invited it right in. I don't know what you do. Do you go out and get an intentionally bad backup quarterback? That doesn't make any sense either.
Does Anthony Richardson come back from this, you think? Like, he's going to get to play.
This is a tough one because, you know, I remember talking to a...
These guys are all out on him.
I remember talking to a restaurant manager about dealing with young employees, that you can't go firing a guy every time he does something really egregiously bad, because some of these kids just don't know, you know? So you gotta really drill it into them, like what the expectations are and everything. But this is so far beyond just the core constitution of how the vast majority of successful NFL quarterbacks are composed.
Yeah.
That I don't know. It feels like such a glitch in the quarterback character that it would even be in him to think to take himself out of the game, that I don't know if you come back from this. It's not coming back from this one individual instance. I think it's just more of a spotlight on maybe some of his inadequacies as a football player. He's just, I don't know if he's wired the right way.
It makes all of those things worse
And it makes you wonder about, okay, with the numerous games that he's missed due to injury, how many of them are ones that other quarterbacks would have fought through?
That's a big one. That's a great one, actually. Yeah, like how bad does he not play these games because he's a little soft?
And some people would say, well, he had to have surgery on it. Yeah, a lot of quarterbacks have injuries that they have to have surgery on at the end of the season,
dude,
and
like,
they muck their way through it.
Every player in the NFL, I feel like, has some procedure at the end of the year.
So, I guess I would question. Look, I'm very, very careful not to question people's toughness.
Mm-hmm.
This is 100% something you can question his toughness about.
No question.
It's something you've never seen out of any other quarterback.
All right, you can text in, weigh in with your opinion. 5-Hour Energy Fan Line, 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football super fans. Power ranking the power rankings. Texans are 6-2. They're the number 2 seed in the AFC. That's what they empirically are right now in the NFL. What are they in the opinion of the experts? We will power rank the power rankings coming up next.